better put him in the Heisman.
Got that wood right here, baby.
This is the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast. Bud Light Seltzer for those anytime easy drinking occasions.
They're going to run and get that boot.
The Arkansas Razorbacks have completed the dream season.
A baseball team that's on the way back. A College World Series title. The Bomb Stadium.
I almost got fired because I went Willie the Boss after I had a little too much sauce.
This is the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast.
So I went on my buddies, Connor O'Gara and Chris Marler's podcast yesterday at Saturday Down South, and we talked about a number of different things. Upcoming season for Arkansas football, what it's like to take in a game at Baum Walker Stadium, but one of the conversations we got into was Darren McFadden getting robbed of either the 2006 or 2007 Heisman Trophy. Some would petition one was worse than the other, depends on where you argue. But nevertheless, most Arkansas fans would agree that he got screwed on not getting one or both of those Heisman trophies. And so with this SEC Player of the Year race going on right now, where Mason Jones is a candidate and is doing what he's doing, I was very happy that Marler than Connor was 100% on the side. And he's actually the one that brought it up yesterday. And you don't hear, he's a national SEC guy. You don't hear that conversation enough when it comes to Heisman trophies being awarded to the wrong person. But he actually argued that Darren McFadden not getting the award in 2006 or 2007 was worse than when people thought Peyton Manning deserved it over Charles Woodson in the late 90s. And again, the argument is typically people side with Manning, or they don't even mention Darren McFadden and Heisman Trophy snubs in the conversation, even though it's one of the biggest and most egregious mistakes in that trophy's history. So as we look towards the future of this SEC Player of the Year award that's going to be divvied out here in the next couple weeks, where Mason is a candidate and a heavy candidate for that award, and we'll talk more coming up. Do you feel there's always a chip on your shoulder when it comes to Arkansas players, coaches, getting what they rightfully deserve? Now, we're going to dive into the conversation why I think Mason is more than deserving of this award this year. But I think that's a legitimate case that you have against, whether it be the NCAA with certain awards, Heisman Trophy, SEC itself. It always just seems like whenever there's a chance that an Arkansas kid might get an award, he's not going to end up with it. This is the Morning Rush. He's Tommy Kraft. I'm Ty Richardson. 877-377-6963 is the number to call or text in. Always streaming live on hitthatline.com. Our video stream is on Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, also on the TuneIn app. And if you have a smart speaker, just say play ESPN Arkansas. So, Tommy, are you still upset about the 2006-2007 Heisman snub like I am? I don't think I'll. And Darren's a Little Rock guy, so I take that even more to heart than most Arkansas fans would.
I think I've kind of let it go after nearly 15 years.
I haven't.
But I, you know, that's like a typical Arkansas fan. We're not mad that you didn't win one. We're mad we didn't win both.
So, he at least deserved one.
Over
but,
Troy Smith, yeah. So where Troy Smith was atrocious.
Yeah, it just it blows my mind that the whole criteria was based around you have to give it to an upperclassman, which I understand. I understood at the time. I was like, okay, that's fine. And then the exact next year, the rule just goes out the window. Oh, Tim's sophomore, who cares? We'll just give it to him.
But that's the typical plight and life of a Razorback fan. That's how it always works. And here's what I wonder. What difference would it make in the program had Darren McFadden won? Make a tremendous difference in Darren McFadden's life. He's always able to say Heisman Trophy winner. Arkansas to have their one and what I would presume would be the one and only, but maybe him winning that one Heisman Trophy would have made a difference in someone else coming to your school that didn't. I don't know. You just think, what difference in your program's direction would have happened? Would Nutt have been the coach longer? What different paths would the program have taken over these last 15 years had that actually happened?
I just think that anytime you can say one of our players, one of our running backs, which is a position always of need, they've won a Heisman Trophy here, you can do the same.
Yeah.
That's always a recruiting tool. It's always going to be that way. It is a Toyota Tuesday. Be sure to check out all new 2020 Toyota vehicles at your local Toyota dealer, including the Highlander with plenty of room, up to 8 people, the stylish new Corolla, the work-ready Family Tough Tundra, and the Go Anywhere 4Runner. Toyota, let's go places. That's one of the, maybe it's not that big of a deal, but in my mind it is. It's the fact that you could say Darren McFadden, a former Arkansas running back, was a Heisman Trophy winner there. And that's an individual award. I mean, I've been around Darren 2 or 3 times. He comes across as a humble guy, and maybe he's different in when he's not seen around media and stuff, but that everything I've heard about him, he sounds like a good dude. And so, and again, he's from the Little Rock area, so I'm that much more ingratiated with him. Like, I feel like that he's like, Arkansas guys are here, and he's even more because we're similar parts. That's where we grew up. So I get so frustrated when I see that. And that's why when Chris and Connor were talking about this yesterday, I was like so happy, because Arkansas media members, Arkansas fans, former coaches, former players, they'll bring this up all the time. But it's rare that you hear a national guy talk about this, like, in just in the public forum or anything like that, because it's not as big a deal to them, but it was a big deal when I was talking to those guys yesterday.
Sure. So, I mean, is that the best moment? Either that one or 10, 11, those seasons, 06, and not really 07, really 06, and then whether you want to compare that to 10 and 11. But those have been the best moments probably in your lifetime. I don't think any question in your lifetime in Razorback football. And if you're from the outside looking in, those are probably one of the 2 or 3 things you're going to remember. Unfortunately, the bad things are what come to mind first, and McFadden not winning the Heisman, Petrino wrecking the motorcycle, things of that nature come to mind first for non-Arkansans.
Yeah, the Reggie Fish muff punt. I was actually, in 2006, I was participating in Cotillion. Did you do Cotillion, Tommy?
No. I don't think they had Cotillion. Maybe they did. I don't know. I was not exposed to Cotillion as a child.
I will never forgive my father, who I love very much, for sending me to the stupidest thing I've ever. Miss Joyner was the head of that down there in the Little Rock area, and the most vivid memory I have is Cotillion. So we're all sitting at Benihana in Little Rock, in the Wyndham or whatever, and we have to eat, and then we go dance. And the year before, the year after, we danced and then ate. And the last thing I remember, Tommy, was Reggie Fish's muff punt, and then us being ushered out. Hey, it's time to go. And then I didn't even get the chance to watch the rest of the game. Now, I've watched it many times since then, but that is the most vivid and unfortunate memory I have of Cotillion. And there were a lot of bad memories from that.
You know where I was when that happened?
Were you at the game?
I was in the press box at the Georgia Dome covering the game, working in this very job. God, I'm old and you're young.
You're old. All right,
Tommy. I was at the game working for this radio station.
Oh, man. Let's get in some quick hitting headlines presented by Williams Tractor.
Yeah, New Holland Dealer Days are back at Williams Tractor, but this month it all runs out. Your chance to get 0% financing and cashback offers on select New Holland hay tools, tractors, and material handling equipment. If you're trading in, now's the time. Stop by Williams Tractor in Fayetteville, Berryville, or Bobcat of Northwest Arkansas and Rogers, and find out what's going on with preseason savings during New Holland Dealer Days.
Once again, Mason Jones was named SEC Player of the Week, but we got to put a co in front of it, because along with him, Emmanuel Quickly, who, if you look at the statistics, Mason had a much better game, but for whatever reason, they have to have a Kentucky player in there as well. They were named co-SEC Players of the Week this week. 4-star quarterback prospect and the number one QB in Texas, Caden Salter, I think I'm saying his name
Salter,
right, of Cedar Hill. He visited Fayetteville yesterday. He plans to take an official visit. That's a guy you definitely want to keep an eye on moving forward. And I looked at the bracket matrix yesterday, which again compiles every single different bracketologist within this one website. It's got 96 total. Arkansas is only in 5 of them. So again, the NCAA tournament outlook is looking bleak. Maybe if you beat LSU, maybe if you beat Texas A&M, you get hot in the tourney, that'll change. But as of this point, your NCAA tournament hopes, they're not looking good.
Maybe if 30 other teams get the coronavirus.
No. Yeah, maybe.
You're listening to the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast. Try the new Bud Light Lemonade, a premium light lager brewed with real lemonade.
Now he does a tightrope act. Boy, Houdini's in the house. We're number 3, and nobody's home to watch that house. Touchdown, Hogs! Holy Hog!
Jeff Warzilla of ESPN.com reported yesterday that he's been in contact with the Arkansas Razorbacks, the Texas A&M Aggies, SMU, St. John's, Seton Hall, and more as far as the basketball guys. So Is it Croswell or Croswell? You probably have no idea. It's C-R-O-S-W-E-L-L.
Croswell, I would say.
So he's a Philadelphia native, 6'8", sophomore, averaged 10 points, 7 boards, and about 21 minutes at LaSalle. And the reason, and this is Nikki put this together, the reason, Tommy, this is important is because what did we talk about yesterday with Clay with as far as the basketball program is concerned? That we think that he's probably going to go after a transfer or two and have a guy or two that's ineligible next year and has to sit out so he can still, in some form or fashion, have his philosophy where there's not too many players eligible on his bench next year.
Now, I mean, we went back over his words that he would like to have 9 players, essentially, that are eligible to play. Mm-hmm. How many of those play? You know, we were kind of talking about two different things at times yesterday. You know, his formula that he prefers says we'll have 9 players that are eligible, and the other 4 scholarships will be either unfilled, transfer years, redshirt years. So, tells me that some of this incoming class may not play right away, perhaps. Maybe he already knows a player or two that are underclassmen on this team that are going to leave. So, he probably has an idea what the makeup might look like, but I bet nothing's definite in his head right now.
Mm-hmm. Again, that report is from Jeff Borzilla, who covers college basketball from ESPN.com, saying that Arkansas is in contact with the 6'8", Croswell.
While I was listening last night to Eric Musselman's show, you know, tomorrow is senior day, mm-hmm. and they'll honor, I think it's four players that will be honored for their final game as a Razorback. They're going to do that a little bit different because it's a 6 o'clock game, and I'm seeing this more and more in high school basketball. Now we saw the women's team do this. They're going to do the senior day ceremony following the game.
Following the game. Interesting. Okay.
And part of that is, it's a 6 o'clock start, so fans are always going to be a little bit late filtering in because of the early start.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm seeing this a bit more and more where they're putting it after the game rather than before the game. And I think that gives fans, A, another reason to hang around to the end, but B, it's not something you're emotional about, worried about, thinking on prior to the game. So I think it's an interesting trend I've seen growing this year around basketball.
Here is Eric Musselman on Adriel Bailey and Jimmy Witt senior night.
Yeah, I think those two guys have had great years. Obviously, when you think about player development type thing or a player improving, and, you know, Adriel was 2 for his career from three-point land. I think he's made 16 threes, or roughly 16 threes. That's a dramatic improvement at 41%. You know, both those guys have basically been in the starting lineup for us all year. They both had good, solid senior seasons. Jimmy's done a great job, obviously, from a defensive standpoint for us all year, and has kind of picked his spots from an offensive standpoint, depending on the matchups in the game.
Both of those guys, Adriel's development and Jimmy coming back, have been crucial for Arkansas to be where they're at. Now, maybe you don't like exactly where this basketball team is right now compared to where they could be, but these guys, if you didn't have them, the season could be a lot worse off, and I think we all know that.
I you know, we've talked about Jimmy Witt's definitely not here without the coaching change that occurred.
Correct.
And Jimmy Witt's been as instrumental in the wins this year as, you know, maybe not as Mason Jones, who's going to be a candidate as player of the year. But past Mason Jones, is he still in the same conversation as an Isaiah Joe? Because you think about earlier in the year where before he had the back problem, whatever's really going on there, this is a guy giving you routinely 20 points. And defensively, you know, that's harder to show up on a stat sheet what he does. But I don't think you can win without Jimmy Witt this year the way you've won.
And I'm curious to see if they put him on Mays, Watford, or ultimately decide who Eric Musselman's like, this is who you're going to guard tonight. Because I know the Anthony Edwards outburst on Saturday night, that hasn't been the case for most games this season. Whoever Jimmy's been guarding has had one of his worst games when they played Arkansas because of how Jimmy's been hounding them defensively. And like you said, that doesn't show up on a stat sheet, but it's very important for the Arkansas Razorbacks to have a chance to win these ball games when their opponent's best players doesn't get off to a good start and just is not efficient throughout the game.
He's at minimum, your third most important player as far as factoring into wins this year.
Mm-hmm. And he does it. I mean, he rebounds, and he has that kind of janky shot. And one of the things that makes Jimmy unique, and Muss has talked about this several times, is when he scores, when he goes for 20-plus, most of those 20-plus outbursts, Tommy, they aren't plays designed for him. He just is like looking. All right, no one's open. Go, pull up jumper, bang. That's just what he's done a lot of times this season. He has a brilliant pump fake because he has the nice little fade on his shot, his natural fade, and defenders have the tendency to jump on that fade, and then he gets him up in the air, draws contact, gets the line, and his wanky free throw shot, man. We could talk about his odd jump shot.
Kind of a push pass type.
Yeah.
The way he holds the ball, and then the way he's just kind of pushed up there, you know?
You know what's important about his free throw is that he probably gets messed with. He probably gets made fun of for that. But his free throw percentage, Tommy, he's shooting 70%. And so if you look at his career where he used to shoot, I don't think he's always shot it that way, if I remember that correctly. Let's see. So at SMU last year, he shot 57%. SMU the year before, he shot 60%.
No. He's changed his shooting style. They've talked about this year. He used to have it up over his head, and he brought it down below his chin.
So it's just odd, but like some players, you know how the granny shot, like people just won't
Ollie.
Do it because they won't make. Oh yeah, Ollie from Hoosiers. They won't make. They players refuse to do that because they feel like they'll get made fun of too much. But if you look at some of these NBA big men that are shooting 50, 40 something percent from the line, they would actually be better off doing that. But they can't. It's an ego check. They can't do it because they're ego.
No, you're right.
So,
and it's like golf. There's only room in the box for a number. Did it go in or did it not go in? It doesn't have to be pretty. Did the ball go in the hole? It's like golf in that way.
Correct. I think of some of the basketball players that Jimmy's games reminds me of, whether it's Deshaun Livingston, whether it's, and I'm blanking on the other guy that I'm thinking of, but it's not the prettiest to watch him play basketball, but what matters is if he's got 22 points on 8 of 12 shooting at the end of the game.
Yeah.
People are too, in today's society, especially in sports, people were too caught up in being flashy and looking good, their presentation, sometimes you just got to fill up a stat sheet and score some points when it comes to basketball. It doesn't matter how it does it. As long as, like, if you're going for 20, Tommy, as long as you don't take 50 attempts to get there.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be pretty. It just needs to be effective.
Exactly. Exactly right. All right, here is, we'll talk about the previous LSU game where Arkansas just got absolutely, just hossed on the glass. Here's Eric Musselman on the rebounding that they need to have tomorrow night.
Obviously, rebounding's been a factor for us all year long, and certainly against LSU. It's the worst rebounding game I've ever been a part of. So we certainly have to do a better job on the defensive backboards, and we'll continue to drill it and try to solve that equation the best we can, but got to rebound better.
So maybe there was, I actually remember, we played North Little Rock when I was in eighth grade, and we got out-rebounded by probably 40. And I'm not exaggerating when I say that. That is the only game where I've seen a one on the court where there was just no chance, and LSU just destroyed them on the glass. I've never seen anything like it in a collegiate basketball game, Tommy, where you get out-rebounded by that much.
And usually it's just a physical mismatch. But it also turns that it also boils down to effort. And at some point, you just realize, hey, we're going to get beat on the glass, and your guys give up even getting in there, being around. You're going to get some rebounds just being around the rim, just crashing the boards, just, you know, where the ball bounces your way. Sometimes you have games where your guys just, they're not even doing that part, just the minimum.
53 rebounds compared to Arkansas's 24. That is the biggest deficit. And I don't know about you all listening. That is the biggest rebounding deficit that I've ever seen. And what blows my mind is Arkansas still had a chance to win it at the end and lost it by two.
Yeah,
that shows that they still have the ability outside of that particular statistic to win basketball games because they did other things in that game that kept them in it.
And Musselman's talked about practices being more physical this week, running more drills, trying to get after rebounding a bit more. He said he's, you can tell from the way he's talked this week, he's still embarrassed about what happened down at Baton Rouge. That's embarrassing to him. And they're not going to let that happen again.
I think it's a pride. I mean, it's a pride thing.
Exactly.
And I know he's,
I mean,
not,
we're saying the same thing.
He's not on the court, Tommy, but as a coach, you take after your players, and your players are a representation of you.
Yeah, your team's a reflection of you.
And so when that happens like that, when you get out rebounded 53-24, that's a look in the mirror type situation. Mm-hmm. Where like, hey, this can never happen again. And there's going to be senior night, the emotions, and I know you mentioned that they're going to do this after the game, but this is going to be an emotional night for Adrio. This is going to be an emotional night for Jimmy. We'll see if Gentile Silla gets in the game at all, but they realize this is their last home basketball game, excluding the potential of an NIT that they're ever going to get to play, last regular season game. So there's going to, I mean, tension's going to be riding high tonight, and you hope that they don't play timid, they're not playing scared, they're not like locked up or anything. They play with raw emotion and they play with some intensity because they can't have another bad start like they had on Saturday.
I think everybody in college basketball has the same goals. I've kind of said that over and over. We didn't do anything yesterday. I mean, we took completely off. So the guys are just kind of trickling in now as I walked over here from class. So our first real interaction since our last game will be when we practice right after this. Certainly the way that we started the game down 14-0 is not the way you want to start it. And how that happens when we got off to our best start the game prior, consistency, I brought it up after our last game. You know, you got to approach a game from a consistency standpoint. I'm trying to do everything I can because certainly the way we started last game was not the way you want to start a basketball game on the road and get down 14-0.
Tommy, that's got to drive muscle up the wall when they had one of their best starts, if not their best start of the season, the previous game against Tennessee.
Yeah.
Then all of a sudden, I know you play worse on the road. That's just how it is in college basketball, really any sport in general, but for them to have
a 180?
That start, yeah, that, a complete, I mean, 180.
It was 14-1 in Fayetteville against Tennessee, and they were down, what, 14-0?
Nothing in Athens, correct.
I mean, that's the definition of a 180 right mm-hmm. there. So.
And I don't know what they need to do to be more consistent in these games, because you also can't, and I'm looking ahead towards the SEC tournament. Maybe I shouldn't, because you have a good LSU team tomorrow night and then a good Texas A&M team that you have to go to on the road on Saturday that's playing much better than the expectations that were laid out in front of them at the beginning of the season. But you definitely can't have those type of games in these next at least three. And we'll see what happens against LSU tomorrow night. We'll see what happens at College Station on Saturday. And then the SEC tournament follows that in Nashville. But in order to get a better seed in the SEC tournament and to at least make yourselves your path a little easier, if you're going to make a run, you can't have these type of lackadaisical starts. You nope. got to pick it up from the opening tip and realize that no one's just going to let you cakewalk through this.
What do you think other teams are doing? If you're scouting Arkansas and you're watching these tapes and you're seeing the way they played against Tennessee, but you see the way they played against Georgia, and this has been a reoccurring theme of good starts, bad starts. It's been very Jekyll and Hyde the first 5, 7, 10 minutes of the game. Even games where it's been close, let's see, I'm trying to remember which game was it. It was like 10-6, 10 minutes into the ball game. Can't remember.
Wasn't that Tennessee on the road where they were? Both teams were just terrible.
Okay, you're right. It was a Tennessee game.
They opened it up.
Exactly. You know, so there's been multiple bats. What are you doing if you're, you know, if you're Will Wade, you know, if you're Buzz Williams this week and your staff and you are starting to scout Arkansas and you're putting together a game plan? What is it about those first few, what are you doing to try to put Arkansas in that mode? Is there something you can see on tape, or is this all self-inflicted? Well, what is it other? That's the question. Maybe I don't have the technical answer, but what is it you need to do as an opponent early to Arkansas to build the likelihood of that kind of start?
I'm looking at we don't know who 100% is going to start tomorrow night. I don't know if Ethan Henderson's going to get the start after a really good last home game, not a good last road game where he had 4 fouls in 5 minutes, but if I'm an opposing coach, if I'm Will Wade, if I'm Buzz Williams, if I'm whoever they face in the SEC tournament, I'm never leaving Isaiah Joe and I'm pushing Mason Jones to his left every single time and then just double teaming him when he gets in the lane. I'm making Jalen Harris, Jimmy Witt, someone else beat me. That's what you have to do to beat this Arkansas team. Now, if Desi Sills goes off, that he gets some confidence, Jalen Harris might give you 1-3 a game, but it's just a simple make other guys beat us.
Well, and I think the other thing you do, and the other kryptonite for Arkansas, is get Adriel Bailey into early foul trouble, because in Arkansas's substitutions become very limited, and there's a significant drop-off between Bailey and then you go to Henderson or Cheney.
I think you pound it inside like you're saying to get one of them in trouble.
You try to get Bailey in foul trouble.
I hope
because,
Wade's not listening to the program right now.
But I'm just one, because this isn't coincidence that this keeps happening. Teams are doing things to make – they're making a concerted effort to put Arkansas in this situation. Now, I think some of it is self-inflicted. Some of it is shots not going in. But there are things teams are doing early to say, hey, we got a chance to be up 10-0, 14-0, 10-2, to make a good early run. And now it's, you wonder how much of it's just self-doubt and mental for Arkansas.
I also look to, and I have to bring this up, the officiating early on in the game, how they're calling stuff, because sometimes Arkansas can get away with digging it out in the post. Sometimes they can't. And what happens when they do that, depending on how the officials are calling the game, is they can get early steals, get in transition early, which leads to easy buckets, easy opportunity. But they get a couple reaching fouls called at the beginning. The momentum flips the other way because you put the team on the free throw line or you start to up the foul count a little bit, and Arkansas doesn't get that early momentum. If they turn you over early, Arkansas tends to get in the rhythm and get hot. But if they're ticky-tacky fouls called, or if they're not able to get those steals on the defensive end when they go in the post, then it typically hasn't boded well for Arkansas early on in games this year.
Yeah, well, one thing Arkansas has got to do, particularly with Bailey, is be vertical, play legal, play with your feet, not your hands. And that's the thing I see Arkansas do. They get handsy with their defense. You make yourself subject to penalty when you put your hands on opponents.
Well, it's, I can't remember which
Bailey's got to move his feet and keep his hands up.
Yeah, I can't remember which coach was talking about this, but it's like you play with your hands up, so you don't give the officials an opportunity, because most of the time, Tommy, you know this, if the official sees your hands, it's going to be less likely that they're foul called. But if
your hands are how you, not always, but your hands are how you foul, right?
Correct.
More often than not.
A lot of times. Sometimes you get hit with a blocking foul or with the body or something. But I think it's also, like, Desi Sills has shown the ability this season to be really good at popping the ball out. That's just been one of his strengths. I think to the Auburn game when he had four fouls, and I can't remember what post player was. I don't think it was Wiley. I think it was another guy. Maybe it was Wiley. But he caught the ball in the post, and Desi had four. He's got a knack for just tipping the ball out. And, again, if you're a basketball player, for you youngins out there listening, one of the things that you should be taught from day one when it comes to digging out of the post, if you're a smaller guy, you hit the ball up. You don't come down on it. Typically, more refs are more likely to call if you slap the ball down. You pop it up because it looks less like a foul, and a lot of times that's that. And he's shown the ability to do that a lot of times, and they're switching, and that's why they can switch. One of the other things Arkansas does really well, Tommy, is when they do front the post, they have good ball pressure on the ball, so it's not an easy post entry. And the backside guy, whether it's the corner man or another guy sagging down, they've done a really good job of sliding over and helping. Now, post players sometimes are just taller and they beat them, but defensively, Arkansas has been really good at times this season when they front the post, and it's difficult to get in that paint area.
Yeah, and make it harder for them to get the ball in. And if you get help defense over, what's that also put you in? A rebounding position on a missed shot. Mm-hmm. So it gives you a chance to maybe get a block out, to maybe get a rebound, because if you've got numbers at the glass, and that's oftentimes how Arkansas is getting now rebounded, they don't have the numbers at the glass.
So I texted you last night that officiating thing. We got a text here from Michael Benenbill, the picture. This is from the Montgomery Advisor, I think. I can't remember the author, but it's funny because the picture of Cal getting tossed and quickly holding his hands on his ears, who's in consideration for the player of the year. The SEC has 7,746 total foul calls this season. That's 553 per 14 teams. As an official, why is that? Because I legitimately don't know.
Why is it more than other leagues?
Yeah.
It's an interesting study because people, and listen, whether you're an ACC fan, Big Ten fan, whatever league you follow. Couple things about officiating. A, these guys work in multiple conferences. So there isn't just a, it's not like football where guys work in just one league.
So you don't have, and I know Steve Shaw is the head of the SEC officiating.
Well, he was. He's not any longer. Now he's the national coordinator.
Yeah, what I knew his title. I didn't know his title, but I know he's no longer in the game. Is the, who's the head guy now? Is
John
it
McDade.
Okay.
John McDade.
I couldn't pick him
out. It's not like in football where you have a staff of officials that work at conference and you don't work across multiple Power 5 conferences. And basketball guys go league to league and they're independent contractors. So to look at this and say, well, the SEC officials are, you know, depends on your perspective. You could say, well, they're better than most because they get more fouls than most. Just depends on your perspective. I don't think the average fan's going to look at it that way. Why is there the disparity per team? Because you can't look at it total calls because not every conference has the same number of games or teams. But you look at the SEC has 553 fouls per team, right? Why is that more? I think generally it's how your conference coordinator, your supervisor of officials in that league is directing your officials to work these ball games.
Who's the head of SEC basketball?
Mark Whitehead. So, okay. Now, here's the thing.
So blame him.
What I'm saying is, as fans, we're going to have to understand that college basketball, not just the Southeastern Conference, the stakeholders, the Basketball Oversight Committee, let's go above the Rules Committee, all right? Let's go beyond the Rules Committee to the Basketball Oversight Committee, the people that are truly in charge of basketball. That group, made up of all the power brokers, has given the directive, not a suggestion, a directive to reduce the physicality in basketball. What's that mean? That means call more fouls. They want the physicality out of the game. And we as fans can't adjust to that because we've seen for years an advantage-disadvantage style of working these games for all of our lives. And then the last 4 or 5 years, it's changed. They want the physicality out of the game because basketball's a finesse sport. You can blame the officials all you want. They're following the directives from their bosses. These leagues are following directives from the Rules Committee, who's following the directive from the Basketball Oversight Committee.
Okay, then question. Why, if the SEC football officials are consistently with the same crews, why do the basketball's not crews not stay the same? And not just in the SEC, but why is that? Like, do you have your, like, when you go ref today, do you have your same crew because basketball-wise?
No, I'll work with different people basically every day.
Wouldn't that lead to...
In basketball, just the style and the system of how it's done has always been... It's always been.
You're listening to the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast. Try the new Bud Light Lemonade, a light and flavorful beer for those easy drinking occasions.
The crowd's into it. They just threw him out of the game. He's gotten his second technical and he's been thrown out of the ball game.
Tom, good morning. How are we on a Tuesday?
Hey, thanks for being my buddy, man. I'm doing great.
So, Tom, I got asked the question just a while back from Ben in Fayetteville asking me, is there a game at any point this season that you thought the officiating was swayed toward an Arkansas opponent, causing the Arkansas basketball to ultimately lose? Nothing came to mind for me. Is there a game that you think the officiating affected the outcome in favor of a Razorback basketball opponent this season?
Wow, yikes. Much like the Florida football game in 2009.
Amen.
Which was probably the worst officiated football game I've ever attended. I'd have to kind of think back through them one by one, and we don't have time for that. But, I think most times the officials, every once in a while, get caught up in the home crowd, and they'll give you a charge block call, a couple of times in a game maybe, and it just seems the home team gets a couple, three extra calls a game, but sometimes that's not the case. I mean, I've seen games where Arkansas is at home and they don't seem to get that benefit of the doubt. So I cannot recall one specifically.
So let me ask you another question. You mentioned last week that there are some games that Arkansas just could have had, should have had, and that could have elevated their NCAA tournament hopes. Is there a game that stands out to you most particular that stings the most, whether it's Auburn, whether it's Kentucky? Is there a game that you thought Arkansas should have had above any other game this season that ended up in the loss column?
Well, the Kentucky game, they were up four after the Cal technical, and then Kentucky scored. I can't remember if it was 11 or 12. It was a bunch of straight points. So to say that they could have won that one might be a stretch. That one they were beaten. But the Auburn game, they were up 11. And just at that point, just weren't getting good offensive shots the rest of the way. And they were so aggressive in attacking when Jalen Harris capped that whole thing with a dunk. I think he had a spin move and just drove in and dunked. And then after that, they just pulled the ball out and needed one more, you know, big shot down the stretch. They didn't get it. So I would point to that one because it'd be a big time quadrant one win against a team that was in the Final Four last year. And I mean, that's how close they are right now to being on the right side of the bubble is a good quadrant one win or maybe a loss, a non-loss like the Georgia loss. I mean, that just hurt them. They lost it by 10 and yeah. Their defensive efficiency over the last seven or eight games has not been good.
Tom, you look at the last time Arkansas played LSU. They'll play their final game in the regular season, at least, at Bud Walton Arena coming up tomorrow night. The rebounding disparity was pretty remarkable in the previous meeting back on January the 8th. What will be different this time for Arkansas, or will it be different this time when it comes to who controls the glass in this game between Arkansas and LSU?
It's just got to be a mentality, a mindset. You're going to go in, and particularly on the offensive end, I see a lot of shot looking when Isaiah Joe spots up for a three or Jones takes a shot, that the other guys are looking at the ball rather than positioning their body or coming to the glass. Now, I know sometimes you don't want your guards crashing glass in offense, but I'm talking about the four and five guys. So, and on the other side, LSU is going to – they're going to work for good shots, they're going to take them, and then their guys are going to crash. And the rebounding disparity, I believe, was 53-24, which is 29 rebounds. Eric Musselman said yesterday he'd never seen a rebounding maiming like he saw in that game. So put a body on them, do what you can, be physical, and maybe the tide will turn in that regard. But Jimmy Witt pointed that out when I asked about the rebounding differential, that despite that, there was a one-possession game. So that means Arkansas was getting more takeaways, causing more turnovers, getting more steals. So if they can keep it, as he said, if we can just cut that in half, maybe we have a chance in this game. And I think that's what they got to aim for. maybe only lose by 13 or 14.
Other than winning the SEC tournament in Nashville, do you see a path to the NCAA tournament, or is that kind of a dead hope at this point that Arkansas could get there outside of winning it all in Nashville? Do you think this team's capable of doing whatever it takes to get to the NCAA tournament?
Well, you can look at them and say that they're not a team that's built to win four games in 4 days, and you sure don't want to play in the first round on Wednesday. So that's the first order of business, is staying out of that. I don't think they would have to win the SEC tournament. I think they could get in if they win these last two and win a couple. And I think, you know, upset one of the upper teams. And then there's this one factor. We talked about it last Thursday. I don't know how it really computes. It's the Isaiah Joe factor, that they went 1-5 when he did not play in games. And the lone win was against TCU. And then when he went out for that long stretch, it was 0-5, all conference games, and it included the Auburn game, and it included South Carolina, and they just they looked like a tired team down the stretch in some of those games. So, my contention is if the committee really factors in how a team performs without a star like Isaiah Joe, and they win these last two, go on the road and beat A&M, beat LSU on Wednesday, win a couple of games in Nashville, then I think they're right back on the bubble because their net ranking is still in the 40s, and you've got a chance when that's the case.
So, Tom, that's interesting because I was going to ask you the question, do you think Arkansas fans are still going to be engaged with this basketball team when the NIT is looking more and more like a possibility? But based on your assumption, these fans are going to be locked in if there's still a possibility at an NCAA tournament berth.
Well, the fans have been excited about this year and all the things that all the things we talked about early this season when they were going 11-1, they still hold true. And those are that Eric Musselman and his coaching staff has engaged with the team. They're great at game prep. They're really great at looking at the analytics and improving you as a basketball player, pointing out your strengths and working on your deficiencies. All those things still hold true. They just had a limited roster and certainly not enough big men. I hope that they retain the guys. I'm worried about Mason Jones. I mean, he's got to pursue what's best for him, but I'm worried he might depart early. Isaiah Joe, you don't know what he'll do. I think he needs to get a little stronger. But the Reggie Chaneys and the Ethan Hendersons, you know, they got to come back and be stouter and you know, add on to their game. So all I'm saying is that I think that Arkansas basketball is entering a good era, and whether they're an NCAA team or NIT, if they're NIT, I think the fans will be there.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's a tribute to what this team has accomplished this year. I know that they kind of flattened out in conference play, but there were some extenuating circumstances.
So with the SEC Player of the Year, Tom, I don't know how it's factored. I don't know if you get a vote, if there's a select number of media members that get a vote. Do they show the votes like they do the Heisman Trophy with the second, third, and fourth place, or they just announce who wins the SEC Player of the Year?
Oh, my. Well, I think guys, like for instance in football, I had a vote on the All-SEC team as an AP voter, and so I think Bob Holt from our staff would have a vote for the All-SEC basketball. And, of course, there's the coaches team and the media team, and I'm not sure if they release the voting tabulations of anybody on this. And I also think my mind is starting to change a little bit because Mason Jones is averaging, I want to say, Scotty Bordelon was talking yesterday, I think he's in the 20, 25, 26 points a game range for a few weeks in a row now. So he's really upped his game when his team needed him the most. And, I mean, just the Georgia second half alone showed you that he was getting his shot. They changed up the guys who were guarding him, but he kept driving to the rim successfully. And when he wasn't getting fouled, it seemed like he was getting bumped in the process. He was scoring, and he was getting and-ones. His three-point shot wasn't on so much that night, but what a phenomenal talent he's been, and a guy who's a great story and how much weight he's lost to become a great basketball player. So I think he's going to get some votes. And I think if I was going to pick a Kentucky guy, I would take Quickly over Richard simply because of his all-around game. And I also think Reggie Perry at Mississippi State certainly deserves notice for his rebounding and scoring and being and his field goal percentage. Very good. In fact, when you watch Mississippi State lately, guys, the games I've seen them, they look like the most offensive efficient team in the conference, the way they've been playing the last few weeks.
Yeah. You actually see, or you get to feel that they could vote Mason Jones Player of the Year on a team that's going to finish somewhere around 10th in the league, though. That's the thing that gives me reservation about him actually getting the honor is he may be deserving, but he's on a team that's probably not deserving of a Player of the Year award. And you should be able to separate those two, but oftentimes, Tom, people can't separate those two.
I agree, and that was my take as of last week. And Eric Musselman even pointed that out. There's a lot of teams with great players who are higher up in the standings than we are. So all I'm saying is that he deserves some merit, and I think he'll probably get some votes. It would be a stretch to believe he could win it. It's happened before with phenomenal scorers, but you know, they're not just nipping at the heels of the conference leaders. They're down in the bottom of the pack and fighting to stay out of the Wednesday game. So it may be too much to ask, but he's had a phenomenal year, and he's certainly one of the best players in the league, and he'll be first-team All-SEC.
Complicated question, but probably a complicated answer to a simple question. Let me reverse that. What the heck happened down in Houston with this baseball
team?
Yeah,
well, it's crazy. They ran into good pitching, so their batting average dropped, I want to say, close to, somewhere around 17, 18 percentage points. Didn't get clutch hitting. Their defense, I believe we were on here raving last Thursday about how well they're playing defense. And then they turn around and give up a bunch of unearned runs. Oklahoma, Texas, and Baylor all tagged Arkansas starting pitchers Well, no, Nolan didn't get a loss, but Wicklander and Ramage both got losses. Casey Martin did not play against Baylor. I mean, he had 6 strikeouts in the first 2 games. He's got to get it figured out. I mean, he's such a quality, talented guy. He's got to be able to read pitches, see spins, or know how they're trying to attack him and not chase. So, you know, I don't know if we're on high alert here, but certainly a weekend like that wakes you up and lets you know it could be, there's going to be some tough weekends in SEC play if they don't get better clutch hitting and play tighter defense.
Tom Murphy of the Arkansas Democrat Gazette. He joins us every Tuesday and Thursday at 7:15. Tom, as always, we appreciate it. I'll see you tomorrow night at the basketball game, man.
Yeah, my pleasure. Talk to y'all later.
All right, buddy. So he brings up a good point about Mason Jones, and I also saw Scotty Borderline's, I don't remember if it was an article or a tweet of this referencing how he's scoring like 25, 26 points per game lately. If you look at what Mason's done, and Tommy, you and I can kind of be the campaigners for his player of the year in the SEC campaign. And at one point, I don't know if he's still on the Naismith top 30 for, I don't know if it's semifinalists, quarterfinalists, or whatever for that the player of the year award. But this is a guy that's averaging 21 points per game in the SEC, number one. He leads Arkansas in rebounding, assists, and steals. Really good off the ball defender. Really good at anticipating where the ball's going. He's also shooting 82% from the free throw line, and he leads the SEC in free throws attempted. I mean, statistically,
he's there.
Yeah.
I mean, we started the show talking about Darren McFadden getting jobbed out of the Heisman, 14, 15 years ago,
mm-hmm.
06 and 07.
Correct.
And I don't know if you did this by design, but it kind of works into
the
conversation we're having now. Well, good on you. The conversation where I don't know, this obviously doesn't rise to the level of Heisman Trophy, but is this another instance where, you see an Arkansas player who statistically is worthy, checks all the boxes, has had the kind of season, put in the work, and perhaps will get passed over? He hadn't gotten passed over yet, but possibly getting passed over for player of the year just simply because, A, the team wasn't good enough, or what we all want to believe is Arkansas, because he was on Arkansas's team. It's the name on the front of the jersey, and they don't seem to favor.
Dismiss it.
They dismiss Arkansas because, let's face it, there hadn't been a lot to be respectful of in recent times.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that just subconsciously weighs on people's minds. You've got to go above and beyond a lot of times as a player at Arkansas to separate yourself from your competition in a race like Player of the Year or a major award or accolade to really earn that. You look at what Ben Attendee did in baseball. Now, Arkansas's baseball program is on a totally different level than the football or basketball program, and that certainly helps make the case when you got a player that perhaps Robert Moore someday could have the kind of season or play his way into that kind of award, and Arkansas would have maybe more than one of those in the trophy case.
Mm-hmm.
But Arkansas's baseball program has put in the work and put in the results to get there. You look at basketball and football, and just in recent times, in recent memory, for most people that would have a ballot, they don't remember any good times because there hadn't been.
It is a Toyota Tuesday. Be sure to check out all new 2020 Toyota vehicles at your local Toyota dealer, including the Highlander with playroom with 8 people, the stylish new Corolla, the work-ready family Tough Tundra, and the go-anywhere 4Runner. Toyota, let's go places. Don't forget about the Camry as well. So with Mason Jones, if you look at, I love KenPom. We bring it up often on this show. But if you look at Mason Jones, number one player in the SEC in his possession use, and you think about how much that went up because of the injury to Isaiah Joe, he is the second best player in college basketball when it comes to fouls drawn per 40 minutes. That's what makes him so unique as a basketball player, is he's not the quickest. He's not the most athletic, but he gets in your body and you're done. You're toast.
Well, and he's willing to drive the lane. He's willing to give up his body to do that. He's willing. He's not just a, not that he can't make the step back three, not that he can't, make the outside shot, but where he's best is, as you said, dribble penetration, drawing contact, and getting to the line. How many times we sat in here the morning after a game and talked about Mason Jones being 12 of 15 at the line? 14 of 16, you know, 10 of 12,
mm-hmm.
double-digit free throw attempts night after night after night after night after night. And that's the number you got to look at is how many free throws did this guy attempt? I know it's got to be well north of like 200 attempts this year.
And again, that statistic blows me away because you think about there's 353 teams in D1 collegiate basketball. And so multiply that by five, multiply that by however many other players, he's number two in that category and number one in the conference. You also look at what he's doing in the SEC. He's top 20 in rebounds, assists, and steals, and points, and he's the only player to be top 20 in all those categories, being number one in the SEC. He's won the Player of the Year four times, which, and that's the first time someone's done that since 2009. Only three players in SEC history have done that.
I think Porter's got the tweet of the morning. He says, Mason Jones will probably win co-SEC Player of the Year. That's been the theme all year, right? Co-SEC Player of the Week? Why not have co-Players of the Year? That seems to be the pattern they're on this year.
Yeah.
Particularly starting off in baseball.
So with the Darren McFadden story I referenced early on, the one thing that you can take away from the 2006-07 season is the criteria that the Heisman Trophy voters had, where you don't give it to an underclassman, then they decide, oh, let's just forget that rule when Tim Tebow rules along. There's not necessarily that criteria as far as the Player of the Year, but one thing I do think they're going to pay attention to is the win-loss record. And really, if you look at Mason, that's the only thing that's prohibiting him from getting this award is that win-loss record. Because he would be, I think, if Isaiah Joe was healthy and if they had won some of those games that they probably should have, this award would be his. We would be having the conversation right now at 7:35 on a Tuesday morning on the Morning Rush that this guy is your Player of the Year in the SEC, no question about it. But because of the lack of production outside of Mason and Isaiah, for the most part, consistently, because of the fact that this team is probably going to finish hopefully 8-10 in conference, that's the one thing that's prohibiting him from winning this award, which is a bummer. So that's just kind of where we're at right now.
So where does that put him? What group or class of player does that put Mason Jones in at Arkansas? Because particularly if you look at the last 15 or 20 years, if you just look at since 2000, let's just say, you know, that's got to put him in there with, you know, not that there hadn't been the Corliss Williamsons or the Todd Days, but there's been the Bobby Portises. There's been the Daniel Gaffers, you know, that have been those type of players. Would that put him there with like a Bobby Portis? Who would be the best players, say, over the last 10 years? Portis is the first one that comes to mind for
me.
Where does he compare over the last 10 or 15 years? I just don't think it's a fair comparison to go back and compare him to Sidney Moncrief, all right?
Yeah,
I mean, you can historically, that's fine, but you know, let's try to keep it in some kind of relative era. And if you look at the last 10 or 15 years, I don't know, maybe I'm missing somebody, but, you know, Bobby Portis comes to mind first.
Yeah, Bobby, you could say like PBev, you could say BJ Young, but those were, you know what, we almost have to wait and see, because if he comes back and they end up having a special postseason run next year, then he's elevated. But at this point, I'd still put Bobby above
him. The story's not written.
It's
not completed.
Until he makes that draft decision, because there could be something special brewing with this team next year if all the pieces fall into place like we think they're going to. That's almost the take you have to have, the stance you have to have at this point, Tommy, because he hasn't signed on the dotted line. He hasn't signed off with an agent. Until that happens, or until he says, I'm coming back, I don't know if we can accurately depict what his story is going to be at Arkansas yet compared to the other players that you're talking about in the last 10 to 15 years.
Yeah, I mean, I think we elevate Patrick Beverly. You mentioned PBev. He's been a better pro player than he was a college player.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, I just think about dominance at Arkansas. I think about Portis. I think about Gafford. I think about Mason Jones. I think about Barford. And I think about Macon.
And Joe Johnson's a little outside that 10 to 15 year range, but he's also comes to mind.
Yeah, those are the players. And Mason Jones has certainly played his way into that.
You're listening to the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast. Try the new Bud Light Lemonade with half the sugar and carbs of Mike's Hard.
A bright red Razorback caravan is headed to Nebraska, and this time, we're coming for the whole damn thing.
So during the break, Tommy saw on his phone that yesterday was announced on Good Morning America that Claire Crawley is going to be the new Bachelorette. She's 38 years old, about to turn 39. Very, very beautiful. I'm not the biggest fan, but I just thought that was funny since
Why
Tommy
are you not
mentioned
the biggest
it.
Fan?
I don't know. I've watched a few clips of her. I'm not the biggest fan. But got a text in here from Caleb from Darnell earlier, Tommy. He's asking, Tom, very disappointed you haven't brought up Madison in her red dress this morning. Let me tell you what Madison was last night. Madison in her red dress was like mid-2000s Tiger wearing red on Sunday. You had no chance. Like
power
it was,
move, huh?
it was just over. Like last night, it was
total
over.
Total intimidation.
The girl, the girls, Hannah Ann and Victoria F, were just, they saw her, they saw how Peter looked at her, and they're just like, we're done. It's over. So I had to get that in there. We always have to get in a little Bachelor on a Tuesday, but next two episodes next week. And then,
how many are they down to? I haven't watched a second, so I don't know.
Two.
Down to two?
Yeah, two SEC girls. Hannah Ann is from Knoxville, and then Madison is from Auburn, Alabama. Fingers crossed, knock on wood. I see her in Nashville next week. I don't know if it's going to happen, but I'm hoping it happens. So, had to get that in there. Speaking of Nashville, Greg...
Sure, it will be the thrill of her life.
Thrill of her life. Thrill of my life. Greg in Fort Smith was asking about Bill Keane. Bill Keane, who I used to work with in Nashville Sports Radio... who appears on Halftime usually, and he'll come on tomorrow, comes on Wednesdays at 1:30. He is okay. I text him and a bunch of my buddies down there and a bunch of people, because we're going to be down there next week.
Yeah, two tornadoes last night. What'd you say, Jenkins? They reported
I think it
nine
said on
dead.
ABC, nine was dead on ABC News.
So, you know, we're getting that. We haven't even really, I mean, I know it's severe weather season technically, but we haven't even gotten to the heart of severe weather season in the South yet. So, I mean... Just already seeing reports of tornadoes, and you know, there'll be months ahead where right here in Tornado Alley, it will affect us, and hopefully nothing that extreme or severe will come our way.
So the question we asked earlier, Tommy, about some of the players that we referenced last 10 or 15 years, who would you put Mason Jones and kind of
trying to see what
lines,
category but... he fits into. Mm-hmm. If you're just jumping into the conversation, we've been talking about Mason Jones, his player of the year candidacy, and he checks all the boxes statistically. He has been a dominating player for Arkansas. Who would you compare his season to? And, you know, I go to Bobby Portis. I go to Daniel Gafford. I go to Barford Macon and those guys. Someone brought up Ronnie Brewer. That's a good name. That's kind of on the tail end, the very beginning of that 15-year run. You know, there's only a few. That's why we... The list is short by design.
Dusty Hannis was the name coming out of the 479 that someone said, but he said he was disappointed in the tournament. I don't really remember what he did in the NCAA. I thought he had one really good NCAA tournament game. Maybe I'm off on that. Hopefully Dusty gets back and gets a longer contract with the Memphis Grizzlies. Kid out of 501, always got to represent. Who are some of the other names? You mentioned Michael Qualls. That's from Jay and Marshall says. He says, don't forget about him. Qualls is an interesting story because if you remember correctly, in 2015, he played his best basketball down the stretch, whether it was the SEC tournament, whether it was the North Carolina game. He was really the guy. I know Bobby was the better player of the two, but Tommy, he was really the guy that turned his game on when Arkansas needed him the most. If you remember the Alabama game that year where Bobby Portis on the tip-in, Qualls had like three SC top 10 dunks in that game. I mean, he's always going to fly under the radar because he's known more as a highlight reel, but he definitely developed his game while at Arkansas and really had a spectacular season in the 2014-2015 one.
And we always think about Qualls with the dunk at the buzzer. That's the play we all go to. But I'm just thinking about players that made the difference in you either having a winning versus losing record, making postseason versus you wouldn't even be sniffing postseason without this one particular player. The domination and the leadership of a player. And you think about Mason Jones. Isaiah Joe and Jimmy Witt Jr. have been great players this year for Arkansas, but they're not Mason Jones. You know, Mason Jones has been the linchpin this year for this team.
And that's why I'm so curious, and I always reference back to his brother Matt, who was on that 2015 team with Tyus Jones, Jahlil Okafor, that won the national championship against Wisconsin. Matt's always going to have that ream. He's always going to have that. Now, he was a role player on that team. He was a 3-and-D guy. But does Mason want to go out? And I got this gut feeling that he's not going to win the SEC Player of the Year.
I just can't imagine them not giving it to Edwards at Georgia or to Perry at Mississippi State.
Or Quickly or Richards.
You know.
So, one of those guys. I think you're
a player from Kentucky. And yeah. You mentioned those two guys.
And I don't think if they would give it to a team that was, I don't think Tyree would get it. They could give it to Edwards because he's had a spectacular freshman season. But
statistically, Mason Jones is as good or better than all of those names, and those guys.
What kind of legacy does Mason Jones want to leave at Arkansas? Now, I don't know him personally, but I mean, he's a pretty popular guy on campus. Like, you, I mean, 6'5", like, good-looking dude, like, What kind of legacy do you want to leave at Arkansas? And that's the question. Like, some guys genuinely like being in college. And I think Rakeem Boyd, one of the reasons he came back, and I don't think it's the only reason, but he likes being in school. Like, we always paint the picture, yeah. not us specifically, Tommy, but these national analysts, these NFL guys, these NBA guys, they're always like, these guys got to get to the next level. You got to let them go to the next level. Tommy, some guys just like being in college. Some guys like being the main man on campus. Well,
there you go. Because it's a little different than when you went to college or I went to college and you were just one of 20,000 students.
I don't know, man. I was pretty popular.
But you weren't Mason Jones popular.
No, I wasn't popular. That was a joke. But go.
You know, there is a difference when you are the big man on campus. There is a difference when you're the starting quarterback or you're the best player on the basketball team. There's just a little bit difference in the quality of your life on campus versus the average student.
Now, Tyler, we is about as humble as it gets when you think of, like, the quarterback mantra, the quarterback role, but I've talked with him. I'm like, it was fun for, like, the starting quarterback in the SEC, that is the most, typically, it is the most notable guy on campus in this
generally.
Time. Generally. It's not always the case. And I think with the basketball team, this team is, like, students on campus, and not just students, obviously the fans and stuff, they really like him, but when you think about Mason Jones' upcoming decision, Tommy, does he want to supplant himself better than Bobby Portis? Does he want to be known as one of the best Razorback players ever? You can't be that unless you come back next year. That's not a whatever, but it's just kind of ahead of him.
And how does Isaiah Joe's decision on his future affect Mason Jones and his decision? We're brought to you by Williams Tractor. New Holland Dealer Days are back at Williams Tractor as their doors open right now to help you tackle the season ahead. 0% financing and cashback offers on select New Holland hay tools, tractors, and material handling equipment. Get by Williams Tractor. They're in Fayetteville, Berryville, or Bobcat of Northwest Arkansas and Rogers today and find out about all the preseason savings that are going on right now.
Great text from Hacker and Harrison. He says Madison in a red dress was Kobe's 60-point game good. Hacker, I agree 100%.
Your number one source of local news and information you need.
Bud Light Seltzer, 5% ABV and only 100 calories. We'd put it up against any other seltzer out there.